Hi there, welcome to this week's edition of The Front Page. Loads to talk about in this week's show, including an exciting finish to the Trainers' Championship, the Craven meeting at Newmarket, an explosive story about the going stick, believe it or not, crazy action at the sales, and much, much more. My name is Lee Mottershead. Their names sat next to me are James Stevens and Pete Scargill, and we will start, boys, with the jumps Trainers Championship, which has been discussed more than once on this show. But James, it comes to an end this week. Viewers, we are talking now on Monday morning, so we've not yet got to Monday afternoon, where Willie Mullins and Dan Skelton go head-to-head again at Plumpton. We've got Perth then for 3 days, and then we get to the season finale at Sandown. James, as we are talking now, Willie Mullins is just under £28,000 in front of Dan Skelton. Has Dan got a big enough lead?
Probably not, and no. We have got a very interesting week to come. I mean, it doesn't get much closer than that. £27,878 at the time of recording,
Monday morning,
and we've seen what the entries are like at Sandown. It's going to be pretty intense for Dan Skelton. I'm sure we've read that with surprise. I can imagine what he thought.
I imagine that Dan has already looked at the entries, but just in case he hasn't, just read out some of the names that Willie Mullins is considering sending to Sandown on Saturday.
Well, yeah, I think that refresh button's possibly taking a bit of a hammering this morning. Lossy Mouth, Gaelic Warrior, El Fabiolo and Peripass, just to name a few. We've not found out what he's going to run in the biggest race of the weekend as well,
the Bedford
Gold Cup. So, yeah, it's been interesting week. Just to take you back, I was at Cheltenham this week, and, well, I think the title races were really brought into life by the Silver Trophy, which is always a good race. It's sort of end of season stuff, but this year we had a Dan Skelton runner, Willie Mullins runner, going head to head, and Dan Skelton held off with Risk in the Ground, who's potentially going to run again on Saturday. One of the themes of Dan Skelton of Dan Skelton's title bid is, if they're running in form, let's keep them going. Let's keep going. He's really throwing everything at it, and Willie Mullins hit back with Absurd winning at Plumpton. In the
How
Sussex
did a
Champion
Melbourne
hurdle.
Cup fifth golf at 9-4 in handicap hurdle?
I've already heard you say you're kicking yourself. But hey, look, you know, who's winning out of this? We're getting to see good quality racing. Plumpton are getting better horses than they might usually see. It was said to Simon Holt in the commentary, the best horse Plumpton has ever been at Plumpton. So great for them. And
it's deserved as well, just on Plumpton, because they put up good prize money.
Yeah, they do.
So that's good prize money, good horses. Simple, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, that's just an aside from me.
Leave it. 75 grand handicap and 100 grand handicap with supporting races, some of them worth 30 or 40 grand.
So credit to Plumpton.
Yeah, fair play Plumpton.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even at this smaller level, i.e. not the big sort of signature races, we're seeing those races identified by Skelton and Mullins. They're looking at them going, hey, well, that's a good opportunity for the grade, and that is. So it's putting a bit of a spotlight on where the good prize money is, because everyone likes to bash prize money, but there are good prize money in certain places if you look for it. So a very, very interesting week. It's going to be gutting for other losers, because there's not been a trainer have £3 million in prize money and not be champion trainer.
Yeah, absolutely. Pete? You are, by inclination, I think it would be fair to say, more of a flat man than a jumps man. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you love them both, but probably you lean more towards the flat.
Of course.
Have you found this absorbing and engaging?
It's been all right.
Yeah.
It's been all right,
but
yeah.
It's by your standards, that is.
You know, it was, we had all crowned Dan Skelton Price of the
Year. Yeah, absolutely.
Even though there was talk about, oh, what if Willie Mullins does this, right? We had all accepted that Dan Skelton was going to be champion trainer. So for things to be reversed in the manner they were at the Grand National, to have that, you know, it might be the iconic image of the season, those first five horses over the last fence in the National being Willie Mullins's, and it all of a sudden being sparked into life. I've enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed how it's come to be something. And look, whatever happens at Plumpton today, it's not going to be the killer blow either way, is it? It's all going
to
be a phony war until Saturday to some extent. And you just look at that firepower that Willie Mullins has. I mean, James was talking about Dan Skelton running these horses in form, but is that because even though he's run far more horses than everyone else in Britain this year, not than everyone else, but then, you know, comparative trainers, he just doesn't have that firepower that Willie Mullins has.
So nobody else does.
Yeah, he's having to call on these troops to go back and go again. So it is astonishing what Mullins is able to call on, and David Casey, who's plotting all these horses, and then Patrick Mullins and Ruby Walsh, who are all putting in the same, yeah, you can beat that. It's a formidable task. Dan Skelton and Harry Skelton appear to be taking it in good humour so far.
Yes.
But they must be seething. They must be seething to be in this position. Because you think, this is not fair. Come on, I've done everything right.
Yeah.
I've planned out, I've gone hard through the summer, and I'm still potentially going to end up watching Willie Mullins pick up that trophy on Saturday.
And I think for that reason, there's a human interest element to this, isn't there? Because both these people clearly want this so much. I mean, Dan has wanted it for a long time to be champion trainer. But equally, Willie Mullins, James, who isn't going to get financial reward from becoming champion trainer per se. It's one of those things, again, where the honour of the crown is what's driving him on to be number one.
Yeah, I think personalities are coming through quite clearly. I mean, Dan Skelton's been in front of a TV cameras, he's spoken about it quite a lot. I quite enjoyed at Cheltenham saying that he was seething. Well, he's already reminded us that one of bookmakers has already paid out on Dan Skelton to be champion trainer, and they've not met one yet. And another one has already paid out on Willie Mullins. So
paid on Dan and Willie?
Different bookmakers have paid out on each. And we're seeing the personalities, and Willie Mullins is a very reserved character. He doesn't give much away, he keeps himself to the ground. You only need to see his entries to see how badly he wants to win this. You know, you're really getting a colour and a sense of how competitive these people are, and also what competition drives. And I think from a wider point, I think I've enjoyed watching this, but I think from a wider perspective, if you think about when we've had shows at the start of the season, we're talking about this Willie Mullins firepower, this idea that at one point there was even talk about how should we say cap how many runners a certain trainer could have in big handicaps. And actually to see someone go and take on this great big juggernaut, the Willie Mullins beast, and potentially beat him in the championship, for all he still has had a pretty dominant year and is still dominant, it's just a sign, as we've seen throughout the last few months in the jumps of things like Golden Ace, that just not everything is straightforward. And I think that's what the sport needs, because there has been times where jump racing has seemed a little bit predictable. So when we can see these not necessarily small results, but surprise results come in, and it's not just Willie Mullins dominating again and again, it's just a bit more interesting in a wider perspective of jumps, and good for the health of the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I was at Air a week last Saturday, and both Dan and Willie walked into the paddock, mic'd up by the champions' full gallop team with sound people next to both of them. So
the guy with the furry thing.
That's absolutely
the
furry thing. So clearly, that's going to be a big part of that story as well. I imagine that ITV are crossing their fingers on Saturday. It's all done and dusted by the Bet365 Gold Cup at 3:35, because there are three valuable races that take place after ITV are due to go off air, and you wouldn't want to be ending the programme not knowing who is the champion trainer. It's so close, that could happen.
Yeah, we don't want to be going to a tipping point not knowing he's champion. That'll never do.
No.
It is worth saying, before we move on, what a season it's been for Sean Bowen.
Yes,
absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Great interview with Lewis Porteous in Sunday's Racing.
Fantastic, definitely should be worth reading. He's been in brilliant form from the start of the season. He, bit like Dan Skelton last year, was second. If he hadn't had that injury, I think he probably would have been champion jockey. He's picked himself up and gone and won. And I mean, he's riding better than ever. I mean, there was a ride he gave at Cheltenham last week, which was just Sean Burner's absolute best. So
he's done quite a few of those, hasn't he, this season?
There's been quite a few. Fully deserves to be champion jockey, and great for Welsh racing to have a champion jockey again.
You're Welsh, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes, yes. Yeah, just confirm that. While Cheltenham was taking place last week, James, and you were there. Pete, you were at Newmarket for the Craven meeting. Just give us a few takeouts on that. We'll talk more about Newmarket next week as part of a Guineas preview. But what were your takeouts on those 3 days on the Rowley Mile?
Well, I was there for Craven Day, so I wasn't there for all 3 days.
You were there for the big day.
Well, they're all big days. They're always big days during the Craven
day.
Big takeaways. Everyone was very taken by something that didn't actually happen during the Craven meeting, but happened previously, which was Desert Flower working.
Okay.
Charlie Appleby sources. Lots of very positive signs around that, really. Lots of very positive talk
about her. Not all of his horses have been running that. I mean, there's loads of winners, but a lot of the hype.
Yeah, bit in and out. The day I was there was talk about, if he hadn't had a good day previously, which he had done, you'd be a bit worried about them. So, they're a bit in and out, but lots of positive. She's 6-4 favourite for the Guineas. Don't get me wrong, it's not necessarily something you would be surprised to hear, but lots of positive talk about her.
Interesting, okay.
Andrew Balding could do no wrong.
Yeah.
Which carried on to Good Friday with a double up there. horses in the machine Murphy riding as well as he has done, which considering he's sort of not necessarily looking to be champion jockey this year. I know this doesn't count at this stage, but it'll be interesting to see how that develops through the season, whether he maintains momentum or whether he backs off, he goes in search of big races. He's, you know, he's moving into that I want to win big races territory.
Yeah.
And Field of Gold was fantastic. And then it's, you know, lots of good judges were saying that this horse is going to improve. He did look a bit, he looked like a horse he wasn't 100%. Yeah, you know, he, don't get me wrong, he wasn't walking around with a big wobbly tummy, but he was a horse he wasn't 100%, and he put that race to bed like a really, really smart horse.
So because you're not really in that chair horse next week, I'll ask you now, is he the 2000 Guineas winner, Pete Scargill?
I don't know.
Jeez.
I don't.
Jeez. What a letdown that was.
He was very impressive.
Yeah.
And you know, he was demonstrably better than the horses he was racing against. Whether the likes of Shadow of Light, Ruling Court, he was very impressive out in Dubai.
Aidan's Challenge.
Yes, although obviously they've all sort of come in slightly from left field. Yeah. And this is why it's been a more compelling classic.
Yeah.
Trials build up this year, isn't it? Because we haven't got Aidan O'Brien with an 11-8 shot that we're thinking, could this be the next Triple Crown winner? So it's opened up a bit more conversation around it. So, I mean, Twain and Henri Matisse, they slightly, despite their former series, were slightly left field in a sense for the race. So, I don't know whether I'd want to be on him as favourite for the race, Field of Gold. And I'd probably be looking at alternatives.
Okay,
but. You know, if you're Jonathan Thady Gosden, you might be thinking, this is our opportunity to have that classic winner. And it's important. They didn't have a vintage year by any means last year.
No,
they need to be getting these big horses winning big races again.
And linked to the fact they didn't have a great year last year by their standards. Obviously, it was Kieran Schumacher's first year as the main rider within Clare Haven. There was a lot of spotlight on him. And some people questioning whether he was the right man for the role. Well, after the week at Newmarket last week, I don't imagine people are asking that question anymore.
No, until something goes wrong, when they'll all be asking it again.
Oh, I mean, it's cynic, you.
But it's inevitable, isn't it? Jockeys are lightning rods for criticism. Kieran Schumacher is clearly a very capable jockey.
Yeah.
He's very able to perform on whoever's horse it might be, whether it's Judd Monts, whoever. And he handled himself exceptionally well last year.
He did. Yeah.
He was a credit to himself.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased to see him doing well. Albeit if he does wrong, people can still call him out on it. You don't have to be. You know, Oshie Murphy was. There was some questioning with him on ITV Racing on Friday, and you know, Ollie Bell brought it up, and he was sort of shut down by his co-hosts. You know, there needs to be the opportunity to discuss.
Yeah, because you're not
and trainers placing horses and what have you. It doesn't mean that, you know, it's a pile and it's opinions, it's discussing things, and people shouldn't be defensive about it. But no, Kieran Schumacher, he handled himself extremely well last year, so
absolutely
fair play to him.
Just while you're on a roll, stretch yourself, James. You referenced Andrew Balding. He was in the headlines again last week because Qatar Racing removed their horses from Andrew Balding, which was a surprise given that if anyone is on a roll at the moment, momentum-wise, and has been the last few seasons, it's Andrew Balding.
Yes, although New Century didn't run great in the Craven, so you know he could potentially feel that if a trainer's horse is running very well and yours aren't running very well,
okay,
you might not necessarily agree with what's going on there. Look, it wasn't that many horses. They wouldn't, Qatar Racing wouldn't actually confirm how many it was. There were six horses listed on Balding's website. Whether it was six horses, whether it was more horses, we don't actually know because no one would confirm it. Fair play to Annalisa Balding coming out and confirming that it happened. She handled herself very well as well.
Yeah.
Because the Qatar Racing side wouldn't say anything, which I found quite strange.
Okay.
But it's a furthering of the withdrawal, the rationalisation, whatever you want to call it, of Qatar Racing and Sheikh Fahad's involvement in racing, really, isn't it? They have renewed their Champions Day sponsorship, Kipco, but no King George sponsorship this year is there, and they've got few horses over here, but they've got more in America now. So it's sort of along that trend line. Now, I think some of the horses have ended up with James Ferguson.
Right.
So I'd be interested to see how they develop out there. Obviously, James is a very capable trainer, had a very good winner at Newcastle on Friday.
He did, yeah.
A new Chester Cup favourite, or leading Chester Cup. Wow. So that will, you know, it'll be interesting to see how, whether, you know, these horses come into James Ferguson, who's obviously a smaller trainer, will help move them along and maybe keep that group happier. than they have been.
Also interesting to say, again, James, keep your pad dry. Newmarket last week wasn't just about the racing, it was the sales. It will be interesting to see, just maintain that theme, whether the 1.4 million Guinea Godolphin buy goes on to become a Royal Ascot winner. Mm-hmm. Ditto, the 1.75 million Guinea Ammo Racing breeze up by. How, as someone who regularly attends the sales and is flat racing through and through, how does a 55,000 Guinea foal with an unspectacular pedigree end up being sold for 1.75 million Guineas about a year and a half later?
I've got no idea. I mean, ultimately, it's not for us to say how people want to spend their money. No, and if they want to do that, that's up to them. The rest of us can look and go, this is absolutely bonkers.
And we should point out, it wasn't just ammo, because all Godolphin were forcing the price high as well.
And if you read James Thomas's sales reports, Coolmore was getting stuck in there as well. So all the big guns, all the big spenders, all felt these horses were worth going to that level. I don't understand what the exit plan is for these horses. If you're spending 1.75 million on a horse that's got... Now, the horse that Ammo Racing bought was essentially a sprint handicapper on pedigree.
Yeah.
Right? That's what... good quality sprint handicapper.
Yeah.
So at 1.75 million, you're never going to get back what you put in, are you? Even if that horse is very good, its pedigree is not going to stand up to scrutiny at stud. Now, timing is a massive part of the breeze up sales. And Van Dijk, two or three years ago now, a friend of mine was saying that the analysis is to the extent that they could say, if a horse does this time in this way, it's going to be this level of horse. And Van Dijk was sort of analysed to be a Group 1 horse, and he proved it. Yeah. So perhaps, you know, Van Dijk has pushed this further. People are saying, well, look, this horse is doing the same as Van Dijk did. This means it's going to be... I don't know. This is all speculation. Mm. But it's almost a little bit like when you see these jumps horses selling for huge sums of money. You know, there's no return on that, is there? There's no...
Unless
it's prize money. So if this is purely because having a winner at Royal Ascot is the be-all and end-all, we know it's the big meeting for Sheikh Mohammed and Godolphin, Kia Drabchen at Ammo, and whether he's got partners in these horses or not, we don't know. Ascot's his big course. Perhaps it's purely driven by rich men and their egos. I don't know. But it makes no sense whatsoever. And I'm not entirely sure it's very helpful for British racing as a whole, because more often, you know, more than once, the prices of horses at sales have been referenced by government as to the health of the industry.
Yes, they have indeed.
So whilst that's not, you know, their fault, shall we say, our lionising of such expensive buys isn't very helpful at the same time as asking for more money from the levy and all this kind of stuff. So it's, it's one of those.
That is a very interesting point on which to end part one of today's show. We'll start part two by talking controversy about the stick that clerks of the course stick into the ground. And I promise you it's more interesting than it sounds. Welcome back to the front page. Loads more to talk about in part two of today's programme. And we kick off by looking at the going stick. It's a device that since 2009, the BHA has required clerks of the course on racecourses to produce readings from to help trainers, owners, punters assess the ground conditions at any given track, along with the official going description that clerks of the course put out for every meeting. Now, last week, James Sanderson, who is chief executive and clerk of the course at Thirsk, gave some comments about his views on the going stick, in which he basically said that he has no faith or confidence in the going sticks to such an extent that he regularly amends the readings given by the going stick that he then puts out on the official channels, that go through Weatherby's and BHA, that trainers then use to make decisions and punters are used to make their decisions about backing horses. James' view was that, say, he doesn't think the going stick is particularly effective, and that the numbers that he gives, or that he gave if they were accurate, would be misleading. And he also said that he believes many other clerks of the course falsify, in effect, their going stick readings. That didn't go down extremely well with the National Trainers Federation, who said that such false information would have led to trainers making inaccurate decisions about where to run their horses, and the NTF thought it was insulting and condescending to their members, the implication that they wouldn't be able to understand the going readings given out if they were accurate. Punters through the Horse Race Betters Forum, they were critical of the comments, and the BHA said they would look into them as well. James, the going stick. I wasn't expecting this one to kick off.
No, and when you said just before the show the stick causing problem, it's usually the other sort of stick which is
so
causing. Yeah, I know, very clever. Yeah, a bit of a disaster really. This story, because
why did you say it? Well, even if that was, I mean, I suppose you could argue he's being open and transparent.
Well, that's what we want, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But it was surprising that he was so open and transparent.
Surprising is the word, and I think the comment which perhaps has raised a lot of eyebrows is, well, I do this and lots of other people do it as well.
Do you think they do?
I'm not sure how much truth there is.
To interject briefly.
Go on, interject.
Our good colleague David Carr, who's been running with this story.
He spoke to James Sanderson last week.
He spoke to James Sanderson, and he subsequently spoke to other clerks of the course.
Right.
Who have told him
that
indeed this is what happened. So he spoke with Bill Farnsworth up at Musselburgh, and Jonathan Garrett up at Kelso, who say that now they're not looking to produce misleading, but they might put going stick on parts of the course they know they're going to get a reading that they agree with.
So they're not saying they change the numbers.
But it's things like, if it's rained in the morning and you have to do your going stick reading then, and it gives good to soft, but you know by the time declarations come around it's going to be
okay,
good, what do you do? So it's being, should we say, creative with the data?
Yes,
that's, so I thought I'd interject that. You two carry on.
No, bless you.
There's different ways it's done. Turf tracks is obviously very different to sort of just taking a go and stick, and in that approach it's completely different. I can understand his logic behind what he's saying. He's saying, well, I'm trying to be as accurate and fair, and if he's using a go and stick and it's not in line with what he thinks is the description of the ground, then what's the point of having the go and stick at all? You've got to ask the question. If the go and stick is saying good to firm ground and he thinks it's heavy, for example, what's the point? You've got two different answers, haven't you? But there does need to be a clear answer. I mean, you've mentioned the trainers. We also had the HBF mention this, and punters want a clear and accurate understanding of what the ground is. You know, it frustrates me so much when this isn't particularly to do with going stick, but I've been on course so many times and I hear it so many times, we have race one done and the ground's changed. Mm-hmm. You're like, hey, which is, the jockeys have been out and said, no, it's not right. Because then all your sort of preparation in the morning and thinking, okay, well, we're a good soft ground and it's actually quite good. And what punters want is clear and accurate information, and anything they can use to paint as honest a picture as they can is important. Nobody's looking at a go and stick and going, okay, it says 5.9, this is a 5.9. And the ground is good to firm, it is good to firm ground. Because we know things change, the weather changes. And not only do punters know that, but also we're dealing with trainers. I mean, as sports people go, there aren't many sports people in this country who've got a good agricultural knowledge as horse racing trainers. You know, they understand how ground works, how weather works and weather patterns and how things change and seasons and the like. So nobody is saying we need this going stick to be fully accurate to represent every single inch of a course. Because that's never going to happen. We just want as clear and transparent information to get an idea as good as we possibly can what the ground is. If we're going to have data which is then misled to read what we think is right, then there's absolutely no point in doing it at all.
And isn't the point that James Sanderson was making was that the number at, say, first would be the same number, would be wildly different at a different track in terms of for the same ground, but surely the point of the going stick is that it's useful for comparing readings at a track historically. Not, you wouldn't necessarily say that because it's 7.2 at first and 7.2 at Ascot that they're going to be the same thing, but if a 7.2 at Thirsk is for one meeting and it was 4.8 at the previous meeting, that's where you make the comparison.
It is, but at the same time, it's the same as using the words that we use, good. I mean, everyone sort of knows good ground of jumps and good ground of flat, for example, is extremely different, and it can mean different in in different places. There are just different ways of how clerks operate. These are, it's not like Ireland where it's sort of overseen, it's individual.
Yes, the IRSB
a controller, and it's managed by them, and their clerks are employed by them rather than the racecourse. A lot of people are quite understandably raising that as a point of concern. I mean, are clerks of, I mean, the sort of conspiracy theorists out there saying, are the clerks of a course using this to try and get more monies and get more runners in and get more levies and have races divide and all this sort of stuff just so they can commercially benefit from it? That's obviously a question mark that's got to be asked because of what we've now learned from James. But it's important to say we need the BHA to look at this properly and work out, okay, are the punters who, and the trainers and the jockeys and everyone who's impacted by this, are they getting a fair description of what the ground is? Because that's what the most important thing is.
Well, on that one, Pete, as well, it sits within this wider narrative of trainers regularly being sceptical, and punters too, about the going reports that racecourses put out. And one of James' comments will only fuel that fire, because he said, I'm not going to put figures out that are going to mislead people or put them off running. Mm-hmm. And that fits in with this view that a lot of people have, a lot of trainers, say punters, that the going descriptions put out by racecourses are not sufficiently accurate, and sometimes they are put out to willfully give an improved perception of how a track is racing. Now, whether that happens or not, don't know. But those comments will only fuel that fire.
Of course. We live in a post-truth world, don't we, Lee? Mm. The truth is not enough anymore. So it feeds into a wider feeling of distrust and uncertainty about what people are being told about things. So for all that, in some ways, I admire James Sanderson for coming out and expressing his view, because it's his view about things, and I said others do concur, others disagree, doesn't help with the overall narrative. And that's where James's point of, you know, a central body coming in and grasping this by the scruff of the neck and saying, right, we're going to sort this out so you can trust what you see. Like, it's got to fall to the BHA to step in and get this done, which I think, to be fair, they will do.
And what will they do about this specific case? I mean, I write in the column last week that the whole weighing room situation begged the question of, why is the BHA not regulating racecourses with a bit more power in relation to failings on that front, given that it's a BHA requirement for clerks to put out going stick readings, and James has come out and said, well, I falsify those readings. What do they do about that? Is it a naughty step situation?
Well, they have no choice not to. I mean, it might be the case in this specific instance that they have to have someone up there monitoring it. They might say for the next, I don't know, but the next first meeting, they have somebody looking over his shoulder while he's doing his turf
track. Writing it down.
Really. So, like, doing nothing is not an option, is it?
Yeah.
We can't all get ourselves all worked up this week and last week about it, and then in a year's time come back and go, oh, could you remember when... This going stick stuff came out. No, there needs to be definitive action, and this is perhaps, I was going to say, easier than the weighing room stuff, although there are elements of the weighing room stuff that are quite easily achieved, aren't they, really? Yeah. There needs to be a proactive stance from the BHA on this. Like you say, if they are requiring racecourses to do it and they are being given public information that they are not doing it, or they're doing it to suit what they feel, then they have no choice to step in, or they're failing in their duty to regulate, and that then only further undermines trust the likes of trainers have in the BHA. They are a body often in the crosshairs, not always fairly, but if they don't step up, then perhaps fairly they're going to be in the crosshairs this time.
They are where you can use your power is in regulation. You might not have the power to
get stuck in, get
absolutely
it done.
Trainers also unhappy about prize money.
Unhappy trainers.
Unbelievable. Unhappy trainers, says sort of a trainer. prize money. So Southwell on Sunday.
Southerly.
You say Southerly, I say Southerly. I wrote a feature about this years ago and it came to no conclusion whatsoever.
Okay, good, right.
Unhappy about prize money at Southerly and at Market Raisin on Sunday, which I think anyone looking objectively at both those meetings, one an ARC track, one a Jockey Club track, would say that the prize money for those two fixtures was exceptionally disappointing. Mm-hmm. and underwhelming. Trainers, perhaps not collectively, in inverted commas, but there was action taken in that a race at Southall didn't meet the three runners that are required for that race to take place, and it was scrapped. Therefore, the race didn't take place. Was that an example of trainers taking, even if unofficially, collective action? And if so, is it the start of more to come?
Oh, it was definitely a plan.
Even though they can't say it was a plan.
Yeah, it was definitely a plan. From what I understand, the plan had been to get the race run and withdraw the horses.
Because at that point, you can't then divide another race to take...
Precisely, yeah. And, you know, of course, we'd have to pay up and it would have been more embarrassing for them on an Easter Sunday. And this is sort of adding on to what you were discussing, Lee, which is that it was a Sunday and it was Easter, so everyone's paying more to compete on those days.
So why did the plan change? Why did they go...
Well, it's the plan, if there was one.
Unofficially.
You know, it's hard to get everyone to agree to these things.
Yeah.
Not everyone's going to align in the same way. And, like, I do want, whilst I have no problem whatsoever with trainers, if they're doing something, to take a stance.
Yeah.
I think they should do. I think they're right. They can voice their opinions publicly and saber rattle, but, you know, producing something that can be seen is more than fair in my view. But if you're just popping up every now and then and taking pop shots even, how effective is that going to be? But I don't know how difficult it is to do something greater when A, you're not allowed, you know it's not something you can do, coming together and saying we're going to cancel all these races, and then you can't always get everybody on side in the first place. I mean, trainers have tried strikes in the past and it's not worked, has it?
No, and just to clarify, so Martin Cruddas, the ARC chief exec, has spoken about this subject in the past and stressed that legally he would argue that collective boycotts are unlawful, so which is why trainers can't talk about collective action.
And when we say trainers, it's important to emphasise that this isn't NTF led.
No.
NTF stance is against such action. So it's individuals who want to give racecourse groups, and it's often ARC, let's be honest, a bloody nose and say, look, you know, we're not going to stand for it. But how effective is it if it's just occasionally and we then all have to sort of dance around it? I don't know. I don't know, really. So whether it's going to be an extended period of unrest is going to be there, but how effective it is, I don't know. That they're probably going to need a more coherent strategy if one can be done. And I would argue.
Just to add on Easter Sunday, tracks were very, very busy across the country yesterday, and I'm sure that only really adds to frustrations from trainers when they're saying, you know, if you're putting on poor prize money, but you look at, even at Southall, there was some sort of screams and sort of loud cheers for the finishes and such. You know, it seemed quite a lively atmosphere for the day, and when you're competing for poor prize money, but the crowd's there, it's busy. If you're sort of looking on as a trainer, you'd be quite frustrated knowing that the racecourse are going to be getting at Galumi through the turnover through on course. And you'd want that to be replicated and rewarded, that it's a big day, they're getting a big crowd, and you'd like to see the prize money reflective of it.
Yeah, absolutely. But ARC also in the news, in relation to something called amphitheatre racing. Just give us a précis of the situation, of what amphitheatre racing is and why it's been in the headlines.
Okay. For anyone that's not seen, amphitheatre racing is a subsidiary company owned by ARC. It's effectively a racing ownership company. I say effectively, it is a racing ownership company.
Yeah.
It was flagged up by Sam Hoskins, former ROA board member, syndicate manager. His view that horses owned by this group were being put into races late to force divisions. Now, if races divide, you get additional payments through prize money and central funding. Media rights money, sorry. Yeah,
the race course does.
The race courses do. So on the surface, it looks like a bit of a wheeze.
Yeah.
And people are often sceptical of what ARC do. They feel they're always trying to exploit an angle, whether that's fair or unfair in terms of the perception. And it felt, you know, there was some momentum behind people feeling, you know, come on, they're taking a mickey again here. Now, Amphitheatre Racing's accounts are very much in the red, so it's not the shrewdest move on the surface.
Yeah.
You know, if you're nearly £1 million in the red, that's not particularly good. And the Rubens and their £26 billion fortune would suggest they're not people prone to making poor decisions in that respect. So whether or not something has been going on is uncertain, even if on the surface level people are suspicious of it. Now, ARC came out and were very robust, very, very robust in their defence.
Yep.
They said, look, yeah, you know, these are our horses. We will support our races. We have horses that run at our courses, and they have to be of a certain way to run in the races we have. And if we do enter them in races and we have larger fields, then that is better for punters,
yep.
better for levy, better for the people who are able to come along as owners of these horses, because they're sort of, if you're a member at Wolverhampton or Southern or what have you. So that isn't that a good thing? You know, even if we're not, you know, we're not doing what yeah. you say we are yeah. support. And Scott Dixon, who trained a lot of the horses, he was also saying, I've never put a horse in a race to, you know, under instruction from somebody.
To and cause a race
said,
to divide.
Again, and ARC said, you know, we have never done that.
Yeah.
So they were particularly robust in their defence, but yeah, people are sceptical of what they do a lot of times. They have to come out and defend themselves occasionally.
Let's end the programme by looking forward. We start the programme by looking forward to the Trainers' Championship. We'll look forward now to Tuesday is the day when Netflix launches a new racing series, Race for the Crown, produced by Box to Box, who also did Do Drive to Survive. The one about golf, I can't think of its name again. The golf.
Full Swing.
Full Swing. Tour de France Unchained. Watch that, it's very good. This one, James, is going to be focused on flat racing in America,
yeah.
built around the Triple Crown. A certain Frankie Dettori is going to feature quite heavily. Are you excited?
Excited is the wrong word. I'm sat next to Peter, so I feel sort of enthusiasm is.
I can see he's excited. He's excited.
He's the one full of enthusiasm about things. I'm just sat on the corner. Now, I think it's going to look. You look at what they've produced in the past.
It's always good.
It's
stuff,
probably going to be. And yeah. I mean, I hate. It's a bit cliche, but the trailer makes it look good. I mean, if the trailer doesn't make it look good, then there's clearly something wrong, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean. There's some lively characters in American racing. You know, they're big. They're almost like what we're seeing over here. They're big, confident characters. You know, we're going to go and win it. And look, I think there are a couple of things with this series which will be particularly good, I think, is that number one is that compared to cycling and golf, these yeah. are sports which a lot of people know a bit about but don't know that much about, I guess, in a wider mm-hmm. context. You know, you understand how to play golf, you know how to cycle, but the actual intricacies, how it works, mm-hmm. is interesting. Whereas in racing, that's what happens, how horses are trained to the general public, that's not as well known.
No,
so
sure.
this sort of element will be interesting, and hopefully for a lot of people who perhaps have watched races in the past and they've gone racing, this would be an intriguing element as to knowing more about the sport, and by that fans will go more. And then Frankie's in there. I mean, Frankie's mm-hmm. a big name.
They've got him coming off the plane when he arrived in Los Angeles.
Yeah, he's a big name. He's a big character. We've seen him, you know, not just here. He's a big name in America as well. There's not many.
Although not as big a name in America as
big,
in some other places.
No, of course not. But he's still well known over there. And,
yeah.
You know, I think it'll be a really good watch. The characters in American racing will be certainly very different to what we're used to seeing
yeah,
here. There's,
not shy.
You know, we were talking about earlier sort of the rivalries over there, which was built up in the Kentucky Derby series and
yeah,
stuff. So
yeah,
it'd be good.
You got the Mike Rapoli,
yeah.
John Stewart.
Yeah.
Not necessarily bosom buddies. And Pete, actually, although this is obviously Netflix, a big global release, you'd imagine the American audience is going to be first and foremost what they're looking at. American yeah, racing could yeah. really do with a bit of a fillip.
Absolutely. It's from the Breeders' Cup to the,
yeah.
the Triple Crown races, isn't it? So that, those are your two big
yeah.
Sort of way markers. Is that the right term?
It is now.
American racing.
Yeah.
What I would say is that it's entertainment, isn't it? It's going to be, that's what they're pushing. They're pushing an entertaining narrative.
Yeah.
So how much is focused on, you know, the intricacies of what goes on with racing,
yeah.
I will reserve judgment. But, you know, I'm sure it will be entertaining, but I would bear in mind it'd be done through that prism.
should say as well, as you mentioned, American racing is perhaps not in the greatest. That adds to a lot of intrigue, you know. If I'm offering you a documentary here, you're going to watch it about team has just won the football team has just won the Champions League. Everything's great. They play really good football. Yeah, that sounds quite good. The team that gets relegated, the manager's having a bit of a nightmare. You're a bit more intrigued. You're drawn to that sort of side. And the fact there's been so many negative stories about American horse racing probably means that there's this level of, okay, I wouldn't mind knowing a bit more about what's happening here. And this is probably going to push it in the right direction because, as you rightly say, it certainly does want that just change of narrative.
Okay, well, that comes out on Tuesday. And by Saturday, we'll know who the British Jumps champion trainer is. And just to repeat, James, you think it will be...
Willie Mullins.
And you think it will be...
Willie Mullins.
Two think it'll be Willie Mullins. I think it'll be Willie Mullins as well. But I'll enjoy watching the whole plot come to its conclusion on Saturday at Sandown. Thank you for watching this latest edition of The Front Page. Thank you to the boys. Join us again next week. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Easter. Bye-bye.